Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, and welcome to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for joining me this Sunday evening here. My name is Dr. Keith Henry. I am broadcasting right outside of Orlando, Florida, one of the areas here in Orlando. I'd like to thank you for listening today, joining me again. Again, we have a very interesting show today. All of my friends, especially my good friends over in Costa Rica and wherever you might be joining me from around the world and also here in the U.S., we have a very interesting show for you today. If you don't know, I am a naturopathic doctor and I address naturopathic medicine from a Christian perspective. And the reason I say that is because there are many modalities of practicing natural medicine, many of which are based on Middle Eastern philosophies, etc., and I choose to address it from a Christian perspective. In fact, the Bible itself, the area in the Bible where Genesis is and where all the healing, that even that area comes from the Far East, or rather what's called the Middle East. In one sense, you could say I am also going back to the Middle East. Nevertheless, I do address natural medicine from a Christian perspective. Now, that's not to say that only Christians listen. Everybody gets sick, whether you're a Christian or not. And if you are not a Christian, if you were drowning, and I was standing on the dock with a life preserver, you wouldn't ask whether or not I was a Christian. You would ask, would I throw in the the life preserver? And so I'd like to, again, thank you for joining me. If you are listening, if you'd like to call in, you can do so. Our guest call-in number is 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. You can also visit me on Facebook or follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. That's facebook.com/naturedoc. Again, we have a very interesting show for you today. Now, if you were listening last week and hear some technical difficulties, the reason that you heard those technical difficulties because I sat here and I did an entire hour show only to realize after the show was over that my mic was unplugged. And so you wouldn't hear any of the show last week. And I'm only going to bring one article from that show that I did last week into this week. And this is an article that was entitled "Constantly Stressed Out People Are More Likely to Develop Brain Illness." But our main article we're going to talk about today, and we'll do it later on in this first that came out this week, or it was actually pretty much a national story. It was a lot of the main media carried it, and it was in this one is entitled "The Brown Fruit Spider Bite Blamed in a Lakeland, Florida Man's Death." And we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about the simple natural remedy that could have actually saved his life, hands down, no doubt about it. Unfortunately, he didn't know about it. If he would have known about it, or his family had not known about it, he possibly could have still been alive today. That's one of the reasons that I do this show, and one of the reasons that I've gone into the profession of natural medicine and also the ministry of natural medicine, because it's also a ministry as well. If you heard me say that before, any natural healing has to it includes a spiritual, because that's holistic healing: the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. Again, this is why I had you address the spiritual element from a Christian perspective. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to take a very quick break. I'm going to come back, and we're going to jump to this article. It's the one that I went through last week. Constantly stressed out people are more likely to develop brain illness. I'll be back in just a moment, and we're going to jump right into the show. Thank you for listening.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Hi, and welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Sunday evening. Again, we are broadcasting at this time. We normally come on ordinarily from 4 to 5 p.m., but the past few weeks we've been testing the 7 to 8 o'clock so-called time slot to see how well we do and see if our listeners this time as opposed to the earlier time. So again, we're going to go ahead and jump into our first article. This is the first segment that we call the Weekend Natural News Review. And if you haven't listened before, this is the time that we look at articles that came out during the week, and we discuss and analyze these articles. The second segment is the Healing Food segment, where I choose some sort of a food, and we talk about the healthful benefits of it, foods. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about nuts in that segment. And in the third segment, which is the healing herb, healing supplement segment, we'll continue our discussion on, I think it was olive leaf extract that I talked about last week that no one heard. And so we're going to spend a little bit more time in this first segment today. So the last segment will be extremely short if we can make it to it, but I will repeat some of what I said about olive leaf extract. Now, and the reason we're going to spend a little bit more time in the first segment, because I want to talk a little bit more about the importance of the spider bite and what you can do to prevent that from happening to you or your loved ones. Now, as I said before, I'm going to pull one of the articles that we spoke about that I did last week and into this week. Normally, we try and stay within a seven-day span there. This is why we call it the Weekend Natural News Review. But from time to time, when under extraordinary circumstances like this one, we will pull one from before. Anyway, in this particular article, it was from naturalnews.com, and it was called Constantly Stressed Out People Are More Likely to Develop Brain Illness. And the article goes on to point out how new research findings suggest or point out that chronic stress over time can actually create changes in your brain, which might be helpful in explaining how long-term high stress levels can actually make sufferers more prone to mood disorders and anxiety as they age or later on in life. Now, for those of you who have read my book, The Biblical Foundations of Wellness, you would know that I have a section in there where I talk about the research that shows how people who have chronic stress over time, it increases the likelihood that they will develop Alzheimer's and some of these other issues, brain issues. And this article just a new article that says the same. Now, again, if you haven't read that book and you would like to, you can get it very cheaply in the Kindle version right now at Amazon.com. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about that here in this particular article or analyze it. They already have spoken about it. Now, the article goes on to say Daniela Kaufer, who is a UC Berkeley associate professor in integrative biology, and a team of colleagues found through a series of experiments on rats that chronic stress actually generates more myelin-producing cells and fewer neurons than normal. and that this results in excess of myelin and as much and as such more white matter in some areas of the brain, which then disrupted the delicate balance and timing of communication within the brain. And this was reported in the Times of India. Now, if you know the myelin, a lot of times people who have MS, multiple sclerosis, they will have holes or disturbances in the myelin, what's called the myelin sheath. And this myelin sheath is actually the sheath that covers the spinal cord. So it's almost, imagine if you will, a plug running from, say, a radio, and you plug it into the wall. On the outside of that plug, or the outside of the wires, the electronic wires inside, they put a rubber or plastic over the wires to protect these wires from being exposed. Now imagine that if you cut or nick the wire on the outside and you expose the covering on the outside and you expose the electrical currents within the wires or electrical wires within the rubber or the plastic which is covered with. This is what happens many times with people with MS. These are some of the things that show up. They have holes in their myelin sheath. And this article, they're talking about how those who have chronic stress actually generate more myelin-producing cells and fewer neurons than normal. Now, you know, you need those neurons for good brain health, but these people who stress are creating more myelin cells. The article is going to point out further that in Crawford's lab, which conducts research in the molecular and cellular effects of acute and chronic stress, they focus in this study on neural stem cells in the hippocampus area of the brains of adult rats. These stem cells were previously thought to mature only into neurons or a type of glial cell called an astrocyte. The team published this study in the journal Molecular Psychiatry, and they went on to say that Dr. Joseph Strand, MD, an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the medical director of CASEL, Clean and Sober Teens Living Empowered, which is a brand new intervention unit for at-risk teens, they went on to point out how, Dr. Joseph Tran, MD, actually explained the relevance of the UC Berkeley findings in an email that he sent to Natural News. I basically put it in a nutshell what I'm talking about here in this article. He says, quote, "Our brain is made up of cells called neurons, which conduct electrical charges as a means to communicate with each other." And then he says, "Imagine a balloon with a long string, but the string is actually part of the balloon itself. The balloon is the cell body from where the message is generated, and the string is called the axon along which the message travels." He says, "Like any piece of wire, electricity is going to travel faster from one end to the other if that piece of wire is insulated with a sheath of rubber. Neurons are no different," he says, "but the insulation is called myelin, which is a fatty substance that wraps around the axon of the neuron to the other, one side of the neuron than the other." He says the folks at UC Berkeley find that some brain cells are more myelinated than others, implying that the signals they send get to the other cells faster than from cells with less myelin. He goes on to say, "The cells that seem to be more myelin are involved in memory and emotions. A person with such a communication system could theoretically be hypersensitive to stresses that another person may let just roll off of their back." The article goes on to say, "In further evaluating the research and its implications, clinical psychologist Matt Ponset told Natural News, quote, if you think of the brain as a series of electrical connections, stress appears to be impacting how well the wires are insulated and how they connect. That would change how quickly information travels around the brain and what path it would take." So in practical terms, the article goes on to say, licensed marriage and family therapist Laura Ware of Leland, Connecticut said, quote, "It seems everyone has a certain capacity for handling stress. What really bothers one person may not be a problem for another." She says, "This is an important point. It's the amount of perceived stress that will add to mental health issues." So you've heard me talk, if you listen to this show, about mind-body medicine, the close connection between the mind and the body. And you have to understand, here you see that stressors that are oftentimes activated by thought sometime or by actions or by whatever the mental stress may be or emotional stress that may be altering our emotions or our feelings. You will notice here, you will see that the research shows how it actually affects the body. So here you have the mind affecting the body, and here you have the mind affecting the body to the extent over a long term of over a long amount of time, to where it can actually cause you to have mental issues. You notice that they point out in the article that it affects the areas of the brain that deals with your emotions and with your memory. And so, again, I suspect a lot of people in prisons and in insane asylums, many of them suffer or from whatever disease, mental disease that they suffer from, many times some things associated with stressors themselves, or maybe their mother or father passed over to them a tendency, a weakened constitution, or many times the stressors, the brain can be affected by certain foods, et cetera, and can lead to brain disease. And sometimes psychiatrists and other people who are dealing with these people, they never ever realize the origin of the problem. Could be chronic long-term stress, and you combine that with bad eating habits, not getting enough exercise, not trusting in the Creator, not following those laws of health that I talk about on here. Again, those laws of health are trusting the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. They can't be improved upon. They are the ultimate healing system when scientifically applied. Now, and so when we consider, again, and this article, this is just one article in a long line of articles that deals with how chronic long-term stress can lead to essentially mental illness and mental disease, and in some cases, psychosis and outright insanity. So it's very, very important to understand that there are many things that can alter our mind. This is why in the ultimate, what I call the ultimate healing system, with those eight laws of health, this is one of the reasons why we talk about the trust in the Creator. Because as we encounter so many different stressors in life, we're only human. And we need something outside of our humanity, some power stronger than we are, to help us deal with things that we can't control, and something to have to strengthen our mind. Some people may say that this is weakness, but I think it's strength. And I've seen it be strength. Even as I talk about in my book, Biblical Foundation of Wellness, I look at some of the research that shows how people who have a religious faith, they heal better, they live longer. So it's just not only is this idea that of trusting the Creator, it's not just a right concept, but it's a concrete concept that can be demonstrated in a clinical setting. Now you are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're still in our first segment, the Weekend Natural News Review. We're going to go over to our next article now, our main article for this segment, which is a brown recluse spider bite that killed a man. And we're going to talk about one natural remedy, a simple remedy that could have actually saved his life. First, let's look at the article. And again, it was reported on Yahoo News, it was reported on television, on radio. So I just pulled this particular article from TheLedger.com, TheLedger.com, L-E-D-G-E-R. And if you happen to be on the, if you're listening on the website, and if you, I have the chat room up as well, you can just go there and, wait, I think I pulled the actual link down, but I have the article here, nevertheless. Again, you can just go to TheLedger.com. That's L-E-D-G-E-R if you'd like to read. Or you just do a search anywhere in Google, and I'm sure you will have a list of these that will pop up. So here, according to this article from The Ledger, it says, a man by the name of Ronald Reese came home from work one day last August saying that he was bit on the back of his neck by a spider. And now his father, William Reese, said the next day his 62-year-old son could barely get out of bed. And then later, a few days later, he actually collapsed, and he was paralyzed on the floor. And 6 months later, he died, which was just here recently. Just a couple of days ago. And the article goes on to say that Dr. Stephen Nelson, Polk County's medical examiner, classified Reese's death as the result of an unintentional injury due to spider invasion or complications of a spider bite. He said that Reese was never tested to determine what type of spider bit him, but medical records show they were definite complications from a spider bite wound on his neck. Reese's father said his son was bit by a brown recluse spider, one of the several potentially harmful spiders found here in Florida where I am. The article goes on to say further, quoting the man's father, this is William Reese, he was the father of the man that died, quote, he was working in an old house, tearing down the existing walls and ceilings and replacing them. Brown recluse spiders like to live in those old houses. He says Ronald Reese lived in Lakeland with his 88-year-old father, who said his son suffered for 6 months from complications of the bite. He underwent numerous procedures and lengthy hospital stays at Lakeland Regional Medical Center. Quoting Reese again, they say, quote, they, the hospital staff, tried to alleviate his pain, but for 6 months they didn't. He says we would beg the nurses to give him something. William Reese said he was devastated when his son died on February 16th, but he is finally at peace because his son isn't hurting anymore. He went on to say, I was glad when he died, and I'm quoting him, I said, thank you, Lord, for getting him out of his misery. The article goes on to cite the Centers of Disease for Disease Control and Prevention, saying that spider bite deaths are extremely rare, and that spiders typically avoid humans, and the bites are so small that only a trace amount of venom is left in the skin. This article also quotes Dr. Logan Randolph, who is a biology professor at Polk State College, and said all spiders carry venom as a way to kill and digest their prey. However, only a handful of spiders, including the black widow and the brown recluse, are actually dangerous, he says, to humans. He says although the brown recluse is not native to Florida, it's frequently brought into the state, and it carries the potential of doing the most damage. The article also cites the CDC, again saying that a brown recluse spider bite starts out with two small puncture wounds and develops into a blister-type wound. The venom can also cause a severe lesion by destroying skin tissue, which requires medical attention. But Randolph said that even a harmful bites aren't typically lethal. The article goes on to say, further, few statistics on spider bite deaths are available, but according to the American Association of Poison Control Centers, only two people died from spider bites between 2001 and 2005, and both deaths were reportedly from brown recluse spiders. He goes on to say that death is not common, and most spider bites complications arise mostly if there is some secondary factor. For instance, if the person has a specific allergic reaction, or if their health was compromised in some other manner, or if the bite causes an open wound with a secondary infection. An article is going to point out, with respect to the man that died in this article from the brown recluse spider bite, said that his bite actually got infected and grew an abscess on the back of his neck, which pressed on his spinal cord. His family said he developed several illnesses, including pneumonia, which eventually led to his death. Happily, his father said, most folks aren't going to encounter spider bites. And the article goes on to say the eight-legged creatures typically avoid human contact, but the brown recluse spiders like to live in dark places such as cabinets and closets. Widow spiders, black widow spiders, are usually only active at night, he said. He says most spiders aren't going to attack you. It's when you trap them or you're moving something out of a cabinet and your hand brushes them. It's typically a defense, and they react rather than attack. The CDC recommends people who think they have been bitten by a dangerous spider to immediately seek medical attention. And the article goes on to say, but sometimes even immediate medical attention can't help. Reese said he wishes doctors had done more to help his son. He goes on to say, a brown recluse is not anything you want to mess with. It hurts real bad that he's gone. He was a very good man. That's his father, end quote. Now, I posted an article on my blog some time ago, and we were doing a radio show here locally in Orlando. We also talked about it, and you can read it. You can go to faith3ministries.com/WordPress, and you can read where there's another lady who was bitten on her breast by a brown recluse spider, and she ended up in a coma. And so the brown recluse spider does carry a very deadly bite. But there's something that can be done about the brown recluse spider, and which could have saved this man's life. And I'm going to highly recommend that you listen very carefully, and also that if you haven't done so, that you go to my website and you download this free report. Just go to phase3ministries.com. That's P-H-A-S-E, the number 3, ministries.com/ emergency herbal medicine report.htm. Again, let me say that again. That's Phase 3 Ministries, P-H-A-S-E, the number 3, Ministries, MINISTRIES.com/EmergencyHerbalMedicineReport.htm. And you go there and you can download this report free. It also puts you on my mailing list to receive my free newsletter. And in this report, you're going to find what I'm going to tell you now about if you're ever bitten by a brown recluse spider. Not only a brown recluse spider, but any type of a spider or insect. You want to do this. Now, I'm going to read from this, what I've written in this report. I put this report together a few years back, and I'm going to quote directly from this report that I really hope that you go and you download it. What you're going to use for a brown recluse spider bite, which would have helped in this particular instance, is activated charcoal. Now, I'm going to refer to the report here that I'm telling you to go and download free of charge. And I'm going to talk in the context of bee stings, insect bites, spider bites, but activated charcoal works in all cases. And I'm going to tell you how to use it here. You can even combine with it flaxseed, but you don't have to. Flaxseed just helps it bind a little better, and it also helps the pulling or the drawing out of the poison of these bites. But here I have, in this particular Emergency Natural Medicine Report, how activated charcoal is definitely God's anti-venom agent in cases of emergencies for venomous bites, fire ant bites, mosquito bites, trigger bites, poison ivy, and various other bites, including spiders, including the brown recluse spider. And then I quote Dr. Agatha Thrash, MD. She points out, quote, fire ants leave a sterile abscess under the sting from the venom, which kills a tiny area of tissue. An ordinary Band-Aid, wet slightly and rubbed with a charcoal tablet until it's entirely black, and applied as a mini poultice combats ant stings. This can be done, as noted above, for mosquito bites, sugar bites, and poison ivy. Dr. Thrash, in discussing the use of charcoal with regard to bee stings, says, quote, many years ago, we had a young worker who was stung on the finger by a yellow jacket. He spent one sleepless night due to pain and was about to go into his second when he decided that he would apply a charcoal poultice. At that time, none of us had used charcoal poultices for yellow jacket stings and didn't know what to expect. Within 5 minutes, the pain was gone, and he slept all night. Since that time, whenever anyone is stung by a bee, wasp, or yellow jacket, we promptly apply a poultice, which would prevent either swelling or pain. Again, if you don't have it, purchase activated charcoal. Also, download this Emergency Natural Medicine Report and keep it printed out, or keep it somewhere, download it to your computer or to your laptop or your cell phone, print it out, do whatever you need so you can have it as a reference point if something happens. Now, later on in this report, I pointed out further how Dr. Thrash points out that the treatment of choice for a brown recluse spider bite is charcoal. In fact, she points out, or I point out, there is no other recognized treatment except wide surgical excision. There is no known antidote. And this is from the perspective of what we call conventional medicine. Now, in the natural medicine realm, as she just pointed out and as I pointed out, activated charcoal is what you want to use. That is a godsend. And I have a picture in there. You'll see the picture if you download it, of a bite that the venom of the brown recluse spider has eaten clear down almost essentially to the bone. You can see the nerves, etc., after a few days of not being treated. I also cited in this report, speaking of charcoal, Dr. Dana Meyer, NMD, she says, quote, it's the only thing to do for a brown recluse spider bite. Conventional medicine treatment consists of giving both an antibiotic and prednisone, both of which are basically worthless in preventing the inevitable tissue damage that will follow. But placing a charcoal poultice over the bite site will pull the toxins out of the system, usually in as little as 1 hour. She says, I have used it successfully in black widow spider bites, which is not as serious as the brown recluse bite, but very painful. And she goes on to say, two MD colleagues of mine tell me that it works well for snake bite, and I would certainly use it in this instance if I had occasion to, end quote. Dr. Thrash adds, the brown recluse spider produces a bite that gives little or no pain at first. In 24 hours, a purplish red zone develops around the bite, and extensive tissue death occurs. It may produce a very deep and angry ulceration extending down to the bone, which lasts for weeks or months. She says, we have had 3 brown recluse spider bites and successfully treated with charcoal, which produced no ulcerations and only the faintest purple discoloration after 1 week. The sooner treatment is begun, the better. The spider is brown and has fiddle-shaped mark on his back, end quote. So here you have what could have saved the man's life. Activated charcoal could have actually saved his life. And as you note, that his father said in an article, within 24 hours, the next day after the bite, which is probably a little bit less than a full 24 hours, the next day, because we don't know what time he received the bite, but say he received the bite at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and he went to bed, say, 8 or 9 or whenever, the next day, he was incapacitated to the extent that he couldn't move, pretty much. He felt horrible. And then the next thing you know, he fell off on the floor, paralyzed. And so here you understand that had there been the knowledge of using a charcoal poultice, and that poultice would have been placed on that wound at the back of his neck as soon as possible. And I would have recommended that they change it for the first hour or two, maybe every 20 minutes. And then after that, leave a nice charcoal poultice on there to just draw out that poison. And do that for a couple of days, even a day or two. And also drink maybe 8 ounces of charcoal, activated charcoal in water. Maybe 8 ounce glass, maybe 3 times for the next couple of days to render that poison ineffective. And so that is what I would have done. That's what I would have recommended if I had been called or if I had an opportunity to do this. I've used activated charcoal in many cases in my practice. I've used it in my home. I've used it, recommended it to people to use. So it's very, very, it's a godsend. It's very effective at what it does. And I really do hope that if you're listening that you will go to that link I gave you again. Again, if you are on the Blog Talk radio station, which is the platform we use to host, blogtalkradio.com, if you're listening and you're in the chat room, I have just placed the link in the chat room. So, again, that link is phase, P-H-A-S-E, the number 3, ministries.com/ emergency herbal medicine report.htm. And you're going to want to download that, and you're going to want to save it. Not only do I talk about charcoal in there, talk about how to stop a heart attack, cayenne pepper. We talk about, again, the bee stings and bites with charcoal. Talk about how to stop the pain of a toothache, herbal stitches, how to stop earache, asthma attacks, labor pains, etc. And so, again, this is a very, very, very important thing to know. You are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'd like to thank you for joining me. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. And we're going to deal with one other article. I told you we would go a little long today in this segment. Yeah, one other article we're going to talk about where, and this came out, I was going to talk about a little bit last week, but this came out this week anyway, so it's a more detailed article from Mercola.com, and it's entitled Largest, Longest Study on Mammograms Again Finds No Benefit. Again, that's the title of the article. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to be right back to continue. Thank you for listening. Listen to Phase 3 Wellness.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
Hi, and welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for joining me. We're still in our segment on the Week in Natural News Review. We decided to stay in this segment a little longer today. And we probably won't get to our last segment, but we'll at least get to the, which is our healing herb, healing supplement segment. But we will at least get to our healing food segment. But this is an article that I think is very important for us to get to here. And it was, again, it was entitled Largest, Longest Study on Mammograms, Again, Finds No Benefit. This is from Mercola, Mercola.com. Dr. Mercola did an article on this, and he's talking about this longest study came out recently, and it was published on his site on February 26, 2014. And he goes on to say how it appears, once again, major industry defenders will remain in complete denial and do anything possible to put profits before people. He says an annual mammogram is the conventional go-to prevention strategy for breast cancer, but researchers increasingly agree that mammography is ineffective at best and harmful at worst. He says, unfortunately, breast cancer is big business and mammography is one of the primary profit centers. This is why the industry is fighting tooth and nail to keep it, even if it means ignoring the truth. He goes on to say further, several studies over the past few years have concluded that mammograms do not save lives and may actually harm more women than they help. Courtesy of false positive, over-treatment, and radiation-induced cancers. He said the latest study to reach this conclusion is also one of the longest and largest, as reported by the New York Times. And then he quotes the New York Times saying, quote, one of the largest and most meticulous studies of mammography ever done involving 90,000 women and lasting a quarter century has added powerful new doubts about the value of the screening test for women of any age. It found that the death rates from breast cancer and from all causes were the same in women who got mammograms as those who did not, and the screening had harms. One in five cancers found with mammography and treated was not a threat to the woman's health and did not need treatment such as chemotherapy, surgery, or radiation, end quote. So here we go again with people taking something that was meant for good. When I say meant for good, health and healing and medicine, or the idea of helping someone and taking it, and there's nothing wrong with making a living from it, but by taking it and taking advantage of people, of people's ignorance. And so it goes on to say further, he goes on to say further in this article, he says, besides the harm caused by overtreatment, the wisdom of radiating your breast year after year for decades is questionable at best, considering the fact that ionizing radiation can cause cancer. And then he points to the British Medical Journal, where they published an article that they published in 2012 that showed that women carrying a specific gene mutation called BRCA2 are particularly vulnerable to radiation-induced cancer. So women carrying this mutation who were exposed to diagnostic radiation before the age of 30 were twice as likely to develop breast cancer compared to those who did not have the mutated gene. So if you're a woman with this mutated gene and you've been getting these yearly mammograms, you greatly increase the likelihood that you're going to end up with cancer. He said they also found that the radiation-induced cancer was dose-responsive, meaning the greater the dose, the higher the risk of cancer developing. The authors, he says, concluded that, quote, the results of this study support the use of non-ionizing radiation imaging techniques such as magnetic resonance imaging as the main tool for surveillance in young women with BRCA1/2 mutations. Marcola says, I've warned against the use of routine mammograms for years despite vehement attacks from radiologists and individuals hell-bent on attacking me. He says, in the final analysis, it's been worth the legal fees I've had to pay to defend myself against these attacks over the years, as ever-mounting research repeatedly confirms my stance. He says, at this point, the controversy is pretty much settled, at least if you take the published research into account. To all of my opponents, he says, out there who have attacked me for my opinion regarding mammograms, I know they will remain in denial. The big lie must continue to be told to avoid the guilt associated with the damage done. He goes on to say, the attacks only make us better at defending controversial views. And then he says the biggest mammography study to date finds no benefit. The feature study that he's discussing here, published in the British Medical Journal, included a 5-year screening period with a total follow-up period of 25 years. The women were between the ages of 40 and 59. They were randomly assigned to receive either 5 annual mammography screens or an annual physical breast examination without mammography. Then over the course of the study, he says 3,250 women, or rather 3,250 of the women who received mammography were diagnosed with breast cancer, compared to 3,133 in the non-mammography group. So of those, 500 women in the mammography group and 505 in the control group died from the disease. However, after 15 years of follow-up, the mammography group had another 106 extra cancer diagnoses, which were attributable to overdiagnosis. He says, as previously explained by Dr. Otis Brawley, Chief Medical Officer of the American Cancer Society, the term overdiagnosis in cancer medicine refers to, quote, a tumor that fulfills all laboratory criteria to be called cancer, but if left alone would never cause harm. This is a tumor that will not continue to grow, spread, and kill. It is a tumor that can be cured with treatment but does not need to be treated and or cured. He says the authors of the featured study concluded that, quote, annual mammography in women aged 40 to 59 does not reduce mortality from breast cancer beyond that of physical examination or usual care when adjunct therapy for breast cancer is freely available. Overall, 22% of screened detected invasive breast cancers were overdiagnosed, representing one overdiagnosed breast cancer for every 424 women who received mammography screening in the trial. So again, we begin to see how a bit of very dogmatic type of medical practitioning can lead to millions, hundreds of thousands, even millions. We have no idea, probably over many years that this has been going on, how many women have died as a direct or indirect result of these continual dosage of radiation coming from these continual dosages of radiation coming from these screenings. Dr. Marcola goes on to say further. He said the rate of overdiagnosis, which is 22%, is virtually identical to that found in 2012 in a 2012 Norwegian study, which found that as many as 25% of women are consistently overdiagnosed with breast cancer. And that if left alone, these women if they had been left alone, these tumors would never, or this cancer would never have caused them any harm. Other studies that support the findings of the feature study include the following, he says. So in other words, this feature study that he's talking about, this very long study with all these different 9,000 women, he says, these findings that they found are not nothing new. They're not something that has never been known before in previous studies. They've never been found before in previous studies. And so he cites a few other studies that have found similar that have had similar findings. He said there was a 2007 study that was in the Archives of Internal Medicine published in a meta-analysis of 117 randomized controlled mammogram trials. Among its findings, rates of false positive results are high, between 20 to 56% after 10 mammograms. Similar results were found in a 2009 meta-analysis by the Cochrane Database Review. We found that breast cancer screening led to a 30% rate of overdiagnosis and overtreatment, which actually increased the absolute risk of developing cancer by 0.5%. He says the review concluded that for every 2,000 women invited for screening throughout a 10-year period, the life of just one woman was prolonged, while 10 healthy women were treated unnecessarily. That's a life of just one woman was prolonged while 10 healthy women were given unnecessary treatments. He goes on to point out that there was another Norwegian study published in 2010 that was concluded that a reduction in mortality as a result of mammographic screening was so small as to be non-existent, a mere 2.4 deaths per 100,000 person. Years were spared as a result of the screening. He says, finally, there was a research published in the Lancet Oncology in 2011, which described the natural history of breast cancer detected in the Swedish mammography screening program between 1986 to 1990, which involved 650,000 women. He says, since breast lesions and tumors are aggressively treated and are removed before they can be determined with any certainty to be a clear and present threat to health, there has been little to no research on what happens when they are left alone. This study, however, he says, demonstrated for the first time that women who received the most breast screenings had a higher cumulative incidence of invasive breast cancer over the following 6 years than the control group who received far less screenings. So here you have definitive evidence that these consistent screenings of these mammograms can actually do practically no good, but actually do essentially harm you. Finally, he goes on to say further in this article, he says, besides false positives that lead to unnecessary treatments, there are also the risk of getting a false negative, meaning that a life-threatening cancer is missed. He says, according to the National Cancer Institute, mammograms miss up to 20% of breast cancers that are present at the time of screening. He goes on to say, if a mammogram detects an abnormal spot on your breast, the next step is typically a biopsy. This involves taking a small amount of tissue from your breast, which is then looked at by a pathologist under a microscope to determine if cancer is present. He says the problem is that early stage cancer like ductal carcinoma can be very hard to diagnose, and there are no diagnostic standards for it. He says, furthermore, pathologists doing the readings are not required to have specialized expertise. And then he cites Dr. Shala Masood, the head of pathology at the University of Florida College of Medicine in Jacksonville, who told the New York Times in 2010, quote, there are studies that show that diagnosing these borderline breast lesions occasionally come down to the flip of a coin, end quote. So Dr. Marcola says it is important to realize that a negative mammogram cannot be equated with a clean bill of health. All a negative mammogram can tell you that if you do have cancer, it hasn't grown large enough yet to be detected. And this is particularly true for women with dense breast tissue. 49% of women have high breast tissue density. So it's almost 50% of all women have this high breast tissue density. And he says mammography sensitivity for dense breasts is now as low as 27%. Meaning that about 75% of dense-breasted women are at a risk for a cancer being missed if they rely solely on mammography. Because even with digital mammography, the sensitivity is still less than 60%. And so, again, you've heard me talk on here before about in the natural health field what machine we like to use, not as a diagnostic, specifically a diagnostic machine, but a machine to help us get an idea if there's inflammation in the body. And you have to remember that tests are simply tools, and they're just one tool. And when you're trying to decide whether or not an issue is present. Again, as you know, in most states, natural practitioners are prevented from, quote, treating, curing, preventing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Again, this is, as you've heard me say, because there are people who have sought to monopolize medicine. And because they've sought to monopolize medicine, it has restricted the liberties and the freedoms of people to choose. And as I've said before, you should have, if you're paying insurance, and now under Obamacare, everyone is forced to have insurance, you should have a right, if you're paying the insurance, to choose the modality of medicine that you want to choose. The fact of the matter, that doesn't normally occur, because most insurers do not cover natural practitioners, and yet, more people, as far back as 1992 or 2002, I think it was when the American Journal of Medicine reported it, the Journal of the American Medical Association, rather, reported that some 60,000, if I'm not mistaken, more people, might have been more than that, I think it was more than that, went to natural practitioners than went to primary care doctors. And yet, the insurance companies are not covering it. These people paid out of their own pockets, billions of dollars. And so you would think that it would be a wise business practice for the insurance companies to begin to cover these treatments, but they don't. So that would lead me to believe that there must be some other motive involved in not covering that. So again, if you are getting mammograms, year after year after a certain age, you really need to take a second look at that. I'm not going to tell you to stop getting them. That's a decision that you need to make, but you really need to take into account the information that's available. If it was my wife or my mother or one of my loved ones, I certainly would not have them taking this mammogram every year. And actually, I would use different methods. Breast examination is a great method. Also, as you've heard me talk about on here before, how we look to try and see if there's any inflammation in the body, in the breast, in any area. And if there is, you can know that you need to get that inflammation under control. Inflammation is a marker of forthcoming disease. Again, I am Dr. Keith Henry. You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. Now, we're going to go over, again, we spent, as I told you when the show first started, a good amount of time in the first segment, and we're going to go to our second segment now, the healing food segment. We will not get to our herbal healing, herbal supplement segment this week, but we will shorten the time in our first segment maybe next week and spend more time in that final segment and give more time to the healing herb, healing supplement. And as we, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about olive leaf extract and how valuable of a natural health antibiotic it is. And we will plan next week to look at Oregon graperoot and look at some of the benefits of it, how it helps in acne, allergic reaction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how to use it, what it's good for, et cetera. Now, our healing food we're going to talk about are nuts, as I mentioned earlier. Now, a lot of people, in many cases, nuts have gotten a bad name. And many people even avoid eating nuts as they have heard much of the media and the propaganda with respect to the calories that are derived from, say, a handful of nuts, how these nuts can contribute to weight gain, how nuts also deliver a higher percentage of fat calories per ounce than many nutritionally deficient processed foods and are thus considered to be unhealthy. But you have to remember, you're eating, especially if you're eating raw nuts, you're eating them the way that the Creator made them. And so you can't compare, say, the level of fat, naturally occurring fats in nuts as compared to the amount of fat that you may get in some of these foods that have been their nutrients and given to us as healthy. Now, as the incidence of metabolic syndrome are come more and more into people's minds, like the health metrics that increase risk of diabetes, heart disease, and many other of these potentially fatal chronic conditions continue to go up and up and up. Many people who are unsuspecting find that, okay, things like nuts can't be eaten. And they worry about nuts, and then I'm going to gain weight, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a research team from Loma Linda University in California recently that studied 803 Seventh-day Adventist adults to establish, by the way, Loma Linda University is actually a Seventh-day Adventist college, university. And here at a team from Loma Linda University in California studied 803 Seventh-day Adventist adults to establish an association between tree nuts, and specifically almonds, Brazil nuts, cashews, hazelnuts, macadamias, pecans, pine nuts, pistachios, and walnuts. And in this study, they wanted to see the association between these nuts and metabolic syndrome and obesity in a population with a wide range of nut intake, ranging from never to daily. And publishing results of their work in the journal PLOS-1, the scientists were able to actually determine that the amount of tree nuts consumed daily correlated directly to the prevalence of obesity in the adult participants. Now, let's look at this. the researchers used a what was called a validated food frequency questionnaire to determine the daily intake of the tree nuts and also peanuts, both taken together as well as separately. The participants were then rated as to high tree nut consumption, averaging 16 grams per day, to low consumption with an average intake of only 5 grams per day. And the lead study author, Dr. Karen Gesalato Siegel, said, quote, "Our results showed that one serving, 28 grams of 1 ounce, of tree nuts per week were significantly associated with 7% less metabolic syndrome. Doubling this consumption could potentially reduce metabolic syndrome risk by 14%. So they found now that eating these nuts, these tree nuts, actually cut back on the metabolic syndrome condition. Now, again, these are health metrics that point to the things that will actually end up putting you into a situation where you could be increase the risk of you developing diabetes, heart disease, etc. And again, metabolic syndrome, let me back up on that for a second, actually increases or is associated with consistent increase in your abdominal obesity, elevation of your triglycerides, low HDL cholesterol, which is your good cholesterol, high blood pressure, as well as hyperglycemia, basically high blood sugar. All of these are signals that your metabolic deterioration is going on in your body and is forced to deal with a cascade of physical abnormalities when you get into this metabolic syndrome. And these lead to cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, dementia, and also a drastically lower quality of life. Again, it's not just about quantity of life. It's also about quality of life. And so, they found that regular consumption of tree nuts can actually lower the risk associated with this metabolic syndrome, and it can also help to balance oxidized cholesterol ratios, and also improve vascular function, largely according to the study, due to their monounsaturated fat content and their wealth of minerals that are supplied in a handful of the small, tasty gems, as you might want to call them. Another benefit the researchers found is that it helped to lower body weight. Again, although nuts are relatively high in calories, they squelch appetite by providing a solid source of non-animal protein. They have little to no impact on blood glucose levels. So again, for people who are diabetic, by eating nuts, it can help. You don't have to worry about necessarily these tree nuts of your blood sugar out of whack. And so they do, but at the same time, you're getting the protein and also the fat. Can help slow down digestive processes that cause the blood sugar to be going up and down. Now, also, one other thing that came out of this study is that there's some evidence to suggest that the monounsaturated fats are conserved by the body for cellular metabolism and are actually not readily burned as a source of fuel by the body. In fact, the lead doctor in the study concluded that, quote, she says, "We found that high tree nut consumers have significantly lower prevalence of obesity compared to the low tree nut consumers, and high consumers of tree nuts, the lowest prevalence of obesity when compared to the low peanut tree nut groups." She says that nutrition experts recommend eating 1.5 ounces of tree nuts each day, which is the amount in a good-sized hand food to actually help ward off chronic disease processes and help keep your weight in track. So remember, if you are eating nuts, or if you're afraid of eating nuts daily, remember, nuts are good for you, especially ideally when they're eaten raw, be they pecans, not so much peanuts, but almonds, macadamia nuts, Brazil nuts, cashews, hazelnuts, pine nuts, pistachios, walnuts. And these, again, foods that the Creator has given us, they're basically very, very healthy foods. Peanuts, not so much of a healthy nut as the other ones. Again, they grow from the ground. When we're talking about here, this study was done on tree nuts. Again, you have been listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I am essentially almost out of time. I'd like to remind you to be sure to visit phase3ministries.com/WordPress. I'd like to also remind you to listen the same time, same place next week and share this information with your family and your friends. It will be available. The download will be available at about 5 minutes after the show is over. And you can share it. You can listen if you happen to come to the show late.